We want you to meet one of the guys behind the big grill. Andy Noonan is well known for chicken, being the guy behind Foul Play, the free-range BBQ chicken spot within the Square Bell pub, but that's only one aspect of what this talented Dubliner does.
Andy is a master of so many things. He owns restaurants like his Live Fire Chicken Joint, he develops festivals like the Big Grill in Dublin's Herbert Park, and he runs private events and cookery classes via his company Based. Changing how us Irish observe, apply, and embrace the barbecue, Noonan is almost single-handedly convincing us all to start cooking over charcoal and open flames and never look back, including, I have to say, ourselves.
Forever on the go, he's a hard man to pin down, but we managed to meet up on a rainy day in Dublin to chew the fat about how one of the simplest and most traditional methods of cooking was kind of lost.
My name is Andy Noonan. I am co-founder, creator of Big Grill, co-owner of Foul Play, and owner of Based.
Let's talk about yourself for a little while. So your history as a chef and as a cook.
Yeah, I suppose I'm not classically trained or anything like that. I'm more self-taught. I've always been into cooking with fire. When we were really young, we used to go to like lakes fishing when I was a kid in Loch Carb and stuff like that. And we'd always remember we'd light fires with sticks, you know, on an island. We'd pull up an island, we'd cook like local lamb. And those smells and the flavour and the sort of sense of occasion always stuck with me. So I always kind of, in the back of my mind, was always cooking with fire, messing around. I always cooked at home from a young age. And I suppose it just grew and grew and grew, really. And then I was running an event company at the time. We were doing a lot of production, like Bacardi bars at festivals and things like that. And we were doing production on things like Life Festival and working on EP and stuff. So it was like, we kind of knew how to run festivals. So we kind of went, well, why don't we do our own festival, you know? So decided to do a barbecue festival. And that's kind of how I moved out of day-to-day event work and stuff into the kind of food world. And then 2 years into Big Grill, Trev and I decided to open Foul Play, and then kind of went into cooking full time, really. And then from there went started Based a couple of years ago, where I've just got my trailer finished this week, actually. I'll show you some pictures, but it's that's the kind of mobile side of it. And then we did, I know you guys are on my barbecue course, so we're doing things like barbecue courses, little pop-ups. We've got a pop-up called Offside coming in September. Robin Gill's doing the first one. We're doing some at the Big Grill as well. It's kind of sitting around the grill, private dining, folks, and whole animal and offal, and forgotten cuts. That's kind of how I went from normal, I was selling cars when I left school for a few years, and I went from full circle from car salesman to now like cooking over fire. So yeah.
Thankfully the cars and the fire never joined together, which is quite a normal thing in some parts of the city. But we blame you / thank you for introducing us to a lot of barbecuing techniques. I don't know if you saw
all of them.
In fairness, you mentioned that we did a great barbecue class with you out in Airfield Estate. And we ended up becoming addicted during that lovely hot spell that was more than a day to barbecuing. Do you find there's a huge reluctance for Irish people to go, why are you barbecuing? What's your obsession with fire? Can't you just use the stove?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, people are more receptive to it now. And I think we've really seen that this year. A lot of the bigger chefs and more famous chefs are kind of moving towards fire. But definitely people kind of look at me and go, What do you need to do that for? Why would you be out in the garden? Why would you be? We smoked a Christmas dinner. I smoked turkeys and hams Christmas morning every year, and people think I'm bonkers. I used to slag a neighbor in my parents' house for out playing his guitar early in the morning. And my brother-in-law was like, "Yeah, but you're out smoking meat in the morning." He probably thinks you're a weirdo. I'm like, "That's a pretty good point, actually." Yeah. So there is a bit of a reluctance to it, to be honest. And you know, my mates slag me sometimes. They're like, "Oh, just stop messing around with that. Just lob something on the grill or whatever." And there is that kind of attitude. But I think the weather doesn't help. You know, I mean, look, today it's raining quite heavily. There was a heat wave. So there is a reluctance. But I think people are more receptive, you know. And we've definitely seen that with the Big Grill. Just even with media coverage and with the audience, the questions we get asked. And, you know, how far we've come with demos even at the festival and how interested people are in those demos. People are getting quite nerdy with it. So I think it's definitely changing. Yeah.
How many years is the Big Grill now?
This is the fifth one. Wow. Yeah, which is crazy to think. Fine. Yeah.
Did you expect after the first year for it to continue like this, or did you have a feeling within you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, like, you know, we were definitely, you know, when we started, I was like, there's a lot of legs here with this, because, you know, to be honest, in our eyes, the first one was really bad. You know, looking back, and I'm like, how do we get away with doing that? You know, but we've come on, we've learned a lot, and our, I suppose the thing we've always done from the start was, like, the Big Grill was always about recreating that sense of occasion, of going to a barbecue in your mate's gaff, whether your family, whatever, and it's either it's not about whether you're cooking sausages or burgers or you're doing, like, you know, a goat shoulder over a fire for 8 hours. It's about it's just about that sense of occasion, having a beer, having everyone together, eating outside and nibbling that stuff, kind of the way Mediterraneans eat and South Americans eat, not traditionally how we eat here, but that's kind of what I wanted to recreate in a larger scale. And we've always kept the kind of mantra of food first. So, we, you know, it's a craft beer festival as well, and we've, like, some great drinks with Jameson and Dingle and Schweppes there. But we, you know, we really want the food to be at the forefront. And cooking over fire is about theatre. It's about inclusiveness, and people can go up, talk to the pitmasters, the chefs. They're not hidden behind a kind of a sterile white wall. They're up close and personal, looking at the food, smelling the food. It's all about the senses, really. You know, so. Yeah.
Sound is drooling thinking about it. I just heard goat shoulder. And you have me sold.
I think it's important to keep food. If it's a food festival, it should be about food and not about, you know, like booze, you know? And that's a difficult balance in Ireland to find. And, you know, bars and drink sponsors are obviously, you know, they're a big revenue stream for festivals, but it is quite hard. We got to a lot of food festivals in the UK, and some have gotten that right, I think, that we love, and some have, I think, gone quite exhibition-y and boozy. And I think, you know, if you remember food, if it's always food first, then I think you'll have longevity with it, you know, so.
What would you say is the formula, I suppose, then, for a really good food festival?
Good, honest food, I think, and that sounds like a bit of a cliche, but I think local food, so local, like, good quality meat, so free-range meat, also a bit of theatre, you know, so you can have, you know, they're superstars to us, some of the guys and girls that we put on the lineup, but to most people who look at our lineup, they just go, oh, barbecue festival, booze, food, grand, I'll go to that. You know, and they don't go, oh, there's Billy Durney from New York. Like, who knows who Billy Durney is in Ireland? It's not, you know what I mean? It's, we try and put theatre first and atmosphere first as well. So I think that's helped us stay relevant and grow the festival, because, like I said, we're not booking the biggest names in the world, but to us, they're superstars, and you people trust you then, because it's fun and the food tastes good and you can see smoke and you smell it down the road. So, yeah.
I'm also still on the goat thing. I'm like, but in terms of the Irish tastes, are we Irish open to new flavours and new meats and new cuts and new ways of eating, or are we quite reserved?
I think we're getting better. I think the first couple of years we did it, we found it difficult. We got a lot of complaints that there was, you know, no free food with your ticket, and you know, my kind of argument to that is, well, okay, well, you're, you know, if you go to a nightclub or you go see a DJ or a band, you pay 15 quid and you don't get free drink. So, you know, we're setting up an event in the field, and we're you know, it's free demos, and we're giving you an experience. That kind of argument you're never really going to win, I don't think. So what we really tried to do is offer different cuts, and I think people are more receptive to it, you know. Like, we did the whole cow last year, and there was a massive, it was actually raining when it was being served on a Sunday. It was the only day we had rain in like 4 years. We had little bits on and off, but the queue was massive because they knew there was a whole Dexter being cooked like for 20 hours overnight. So people were watching this online and they're coming to see it. You know, we did lamb's brains last year. Andy Ricker from Pock Pock in Portland, the famous chain of kind of proper Northern Isan style Thai restaurants, he did lamb's brains and MSG brined flank steak. You know, we're doing sweetbreads, we're doing chinchulines this year in the Argentinian barbecue, which is small intestines of a young cow or a veal. I think people are more receptive to that. I mean, a few years ago I would have been a bit nervous about putting that stuff on the menu, you know, but we still do get the whole, you know, I want a burger. People do come and they want a burger and a sausage, and that's fine, you know. We have a small bit of that to cater for that in the site, and that's cool. But definitely we're moving towards more towards nose to tail and making use of offal. And I think, you know, we've sold a lot of tickets for our Argentinian pre-experience already. And that's, again, that's like sweetbreads, chinchulines, flank, and what else have we got? one more secret thing on it. So,
wait and see.
I mean, the whole point about that area is called Offside. And the whole point about that is it's kind of a spin-off of Foul Play. It's a kind of playing that, and it's obviously the name.
I get it.
It's probably a bad name if I have to explain it.
it's football-y. Yeah, it's us. Come on.
I don't watch football. I don't like football.
I don't even know what a football is.
No, I hate it. Basically, I suppose, look, the idea is that, you know, there's barriers to eating offal, and sweetbreads and things, and brains and intestines and things. And it's like, okay, well, how do we get people to eat these things? Because, you know, in the way the world is going, it's like we can't all eat ribeyes and fillet steaks and chops and, you know, rack of lamb all the time. Like, we have to start using the rest of the animal. And it's important, I think. And as we move into looking at, you know, rare breeds of pigs and, you know, I mean, lamb is perfect here, but beef as well, like Peter Hannon's beef. You know, we need to start looking at using the whole animal. And the flavour, like, is often better in a lot of cuts, in my opinion. Flank steak, for example, is probably my favourite cut, you know, from a cow, and brisket, you know. It's a totally different flavour from a T-bone or a ribeye or whatever. But the point is, what we're trying to do with the Offside thing is, I suppose, put people in an environment where they feel comfortable. They have a glass of wine, and they're getting little dishes, and they're in front of the chef, and there's a bit of an experience. And then we're kind of almost controlling the environment, and we're going to give them little dishes, and they're going to go, "Oh, what's that chinchulines? What's chinchulines? Just eat it, and we'll eat it. Maybe some chimichurri with it as well. You like the chimichurri?" Yeah. But so we're going to just try and get people to start eating stuff, and then we're going to go, "Well, that's actually, you know, the small intestine of a young cow," and they go, "Oh, that was really nice," and go, "Well, there you go. Next time you'll eat it." And that's, "What's a sweetbread? Eat it, and then we'll tell you." You know, so it's kind of a surprise menu, and that's the thing I'll be doing with Robin in September as well, where we're going to be doing again, it's a kind of a surprise menu like that as well. It's breaking down barriers to get people to eat offal. I always tell people about there was a rugby match on here. We're always full in here for rugby, and a lot of my mates were in watching the game. And I was working behind the counter, and I was like, we were doing lots of chicken hearts with chimichurri, actually. And I brought over loads of chicken heart skewers fresh off the grill, and everyone dug into them and started eating them. And they're like, "Oh, Daddy, what are these?" And I was like, "Chicken hearts." And they all just put them down. And I was like, "What are you doing?" They're like, "I'm not eating them." I was like, "You just ate them and you liked them. You saw it, you liked it, and then you ate it and you were enjoying it until I told you what it was, and then you just stopped eating it." That's just a mental block, and that's what we need to get away from. And I think sometimes, you know, people think about tripe and the old ways it was prepared. And in Ireland, we had to eat that stuff years ago, and people have moved away from that. So I think if you sell it, like I do a lamb sweetbread taco, it's great, like dirty onions in the coals, dirty peppers in the coals, with chimichurri on top, in a nice, freshly made corn tortilla. And it's like one of the most amazing tacos you'll ever eat. But if people knew what was in it, they wouldn't eat it. So it's about trying to give people a sweetbread in a taco. So they go, "Oh, cool, taco," and they eat it.
The way you talk about nose to tail is quite interesting, because in the world at the moment, there's obviously a lot of the debate about veganism and how it is the more sustainable option. But it's quite interesting hearing you and quite a lot of chefs at the moment saying, actually, use more of the animal so it doesn't go to waste.
Yeah, totally. I think our motto now is eat the best quality meat you can less often. And with offal and you know, just even cuts like flank steak, and it's not exactly a completely rare cut, but it's a lot of people don't really eat it. And I think the important thing is that people start buying more offal and start buying more cuts. It means that more of the animal is being used, and hopefully, you know, the demand for the primal cuts isn't going up, and you know, we've less animals being killed, you know. And I think if more people move towards being adventurous with meat, and having eaten more rare breeds of meat, it means that commercial butchery and farming kind of comes down, especially with chickens. Like, we only use free range here for even our wings, and like the guy we get our wings off, I was like, "What are you doing using free range wings? Are you nuts?" I'm like, "No, like, I want to use free range wings. I want to use chicken that tastes like chicken." And if everyone buys into that, then, you know, the horrible things that happen in you know, in chicken farms and in farming will start to reduce, you know. And I think that's really important. People need to understand that, you know, meat used to be roaming free, and you know, until commercial farming happens, it was meat was good quality, you know, and it was a lot better for you as well. That's the other side of it. Like, there's lots of studies on farm chicken, and it's, you know, some of them have like no omega-3, and they're nutritionally not very good for you, you know? So people need to think about that when they're buying a chicken for like £2 or £3. It's like, that's not right. Why is a chicken that cheap, you know? So I think that's important. If people change their attitude, the market will respond. It's that simple, you know? So it's up to us to change it, you know?
Yeah. Now, just a sideline now for our vegan and vegetarian audience. There is vegetables as well, and I believe that vegetables can be cooked on a barbecue and over flames and coals and be as amazing as meat, and the Argentinian way as well. God,
well, they serve vegetarians chicken, so we won't be putting any vegetarians or vegans in the direction of the Argentinian area. To be honest, I cook more vegetables on the grill than I do meat. I've been harping on about meat for ages there, but I do cook more veg than meat. Like when we opened here, we had a great dish. It was just grilled baby jam. Just baby jam cooked really hot over the fire, really hot and fast, and a little bit of lemon juice and salt. That's it. It was really
your
nutty.
Favorite thing ever.
Oh, I'm obsessed. If I ever go into Tesco and there's like a yellow sticker packet of baby jam, I'm like, I'm going to burn that. I'm going to put it onto a pan and just put it there. And oh, it's the flavor.
Really, it's nutty. It goes really nutty. And you get these lovely, the outside's like charred, and then the kind of next few layers are kind of nicely caramelized. And then the inside is just a little warm through, but it's still crunchy. Yeah. And you get all these different layers of flavor, and it goes quite nutty. I love it. Yeah. But like I always do batches of aubergines in the coals and make baba ganoush. Yeah. That's the traditional way to make it. But, you know, onions are great in the coals. But veg for me in the coals is and grilled veg, it's a must.
It really is. And when we had the hot spell recently, that was exactly...
Everything on the barbecue.
Everything was on the barbecue, and we did mostly vegetables.
Yeah, aubergines, scapes on the barbecue as well. We did peppers, we did all
cauliflower,
sorts of
stuff. We did a whole head of cauliflower as well on it, and it was actually better than the oven. It fell apart.
Yeah,
because normally in the oven you still have to cut through it. This just fell apart, and the flavour, it was so tender, just thinking about it, it was delicious.
Actually, the Josh Katz from Berber & Q in the UK, so he does this whole heads of cauliflower over the fire, and then he puts he has a tahini sauce, tahini yogurt sauce on them, pomegranate, loads of herbs. I think there's pomegranate molasses in it as well. But it's this incredible, you get served to the table, the whole head, and it's just an incredible looking dish. But pretty much everyone in London has copied that dish. And now everyone in Ireland, it's like popped up in Ireland. Loads of people are like, oh, I went up and tried that dish. Actually, your man Josh was cooking and we're doing it now. And I'm like, oh yeah, why not? So that was one of the most popular dishes last year. Like even all the media were like, that was one of the best things I've eaten. So.
Who in Ireland produces the best meat?
I could say, in my opinion, two people, but I would say Peter Hannon is hands down for me. I don't know. Pat Whelan and James Whelan, they're doing some great stuff as well. I mean, Kettle Foods are doing some good stuff as well. But when it comes to beef, Peter Hannon, hands down for me. It's there's no better man. No,
it's that salting, isn't it?
It is. It's the funk. It's the dry aged funk, and he has it right. You know, it's the umami from the dry aging. It's incomparable. No one's aging the same way he is. And also the breed, the Shorthorn. It's a naturally very fatty breed as well. So, it's, you know, I was talking to him about beef ribs we're using for one of the American guys, Billy Durney, and he's dead set on getting USDA beef ribs in. And I'm like, we can't bring beef ribs from Creekstone in the US. To Manchester and then ship them from Manchester to Dublin. I'm like, we live in Ireland. Like, we can't do that. We have the best beef in the world, some of the best beef in the world. So, you know, rang Peter. Peter's like, I was like, Peter, you know, would it be right in thinking that, you know, the marbling in your beef ribs is going to be similar? He's like, Andy, 100%, you know, give us the spec. We'll get them sorted for you. We'll send him pictures. And, you know, we've done all that. And, you know, Billy's happy with them. He's used to cooking them a certain way. And the grain fed obviously have a ton more marbling in them. But, like, you know, it's grass fed Irish beef, you know, aged in the Himalayan salt chamber, so it's great to be able to use that. So Peter Hannon, I like, hands down, yeah, definitely. You had his picanha. It's
very good. I still dream of it.
So good.
And again, that's not an often used cut. Like that's a much, like, half the price of the of his cut of buff, you know. But people will always go for a cote de boeuf or something. It's like, here's a rump cap, and it's like just as, in my opinion, there's better flavour in the rump cap than there is in the cote de boeuf, you know.
In terms of the cuts of meat, what would be the ones that you would tell everyone to try and find?
I think flank steak is really underrated. The thing I like about flank versus skirt or whatever is you can generally get nice uniform pieces where the grains are running in it relatively in the same line. And you know, you want to grill that pretty hot and fast to not more than really medium rare, not really too much under medium rare, and then slice against the grain. And again, a really different flavor. Things like lamb belly and lamb ribs, nobody really thinks about the belly of a lamb or lamb ribs, and they're incredible. You get incredible crackling on them as well. So that's another cut I'd be pushing towards. And then the rump cap, the picanha, as the Brazilians call it. So really, really tender, full of flavor. But again, it's all about cutting across the grain. So you can slow roast that and then finish it on a grill and you're going to have perfect tender meat.
So as we mentioned, you taught us everything we know about barbecuing in a day. So thank you. For people who aren't us, who probably are listening right now, yeah. And it's a lovely day out, let's imagine. Close your eyes, pretend. And they want to go out, do a barbecue, and they're starting completely from scratch. They don't even have a barbecue. Yeah. Step by step, what should they do?
First things first, forget about a gas barbecue. Charcoal and wood is the only way to go. I mean, you know, I say if you're going to cook on gas, you might as well just stay in your kitchen. It's pointless. You don't get the same flavor compound at all. It's pointless. I get the whole convenience argument, but if you have a good quality lump with charcoal, as I showed you guys, it's you can have that lit in 8-10 minutes, you know, which is as long nearly as a good gas barbecue is going to take to get up to a really good heat. You don't need to spend money on a barbecue, a big fancy barbecue. You can, like, I would recommend buying a Weber kettle grill or a similar kettle grill with a lid and good vents in and vents out, so air in and air out. That way you can turn your grill into an outdoor oven. Do your roasts on it, so you can smoke roast, which is basically, you know, it's pretty much turning your grill into an oven but adding smoke. And so it's great for chickens and rib, you know, rib roast and things like that, and legs of lamb and stuff. But you know, so obviously grill on it, and then if you go really low on the temperature, you can smoke ribs and things like that on it. So it's kind of an all-rounder grill. I'd recommend anyone start. I learned everything I know on one of those. Then I moved up to a Weber Smoky Mountain, which is kind of a fairly entry-level smoker. But you can dig a hole in your garden and put some coals in it and throw some wood in it. We did a shoot for Image magazine last summer, and we did a seafood grilling thing on the beach, just lit a fire. I just put some stones in a U-shape, lit a fire on the beach, and then we just cooked a ton of seafood over the fire. So it's so simple to do that, you know. It's like you just need good quality lump wood charcoal and some good hardwood, and you can have a barbecue anywhere, really. You can have in a bucket. You know, you could even use one of those like foil trays with if you stabbed a few holes in the side of it to let a bit of air in underneath the coals, you can still have a barbecue on that, you know. So you don't need to spend a ton of money, but if you want to get into it, I'd recommend a grill like a Weber, like a kettle with a lid. So lids are good.
And in terms of the wood, can you explain about the flavors and how you choose the right wood for your barbecue?
Cool. Always hardwood, so no softwood. Things like oak, so generally the general rule of thumb is use what's around you. Not always easy to get local wood here. A lot of it's imported from Eastern Europe. I use a lot of oak when I'm cooking outdoors because the smoke, you know, there's airflow and the smoke kind of escapes. We used to use oak in foul play. We're smoking wings and turkey and chicken, and it was fine for brisket and stuff, but it was getting very pungent and acrid for our poultry. So poultry takes the smoke on quite a lot. So we switched that over to wild cherry wood. And that's a much lighter, sweeter smoke, so you can go a bit heavier on the smoke, but we generally don't go too heavy on our smoke here at all. But so things like fruit woods, you're going to get a much lighter smoke. They're good with poultry, some fish, and pork, lamb. It's kind of hickory or oak, things like that are going to be more beef, pork, kind of heavier red meat. We'll take a stronger smoke. And then things like beech and ash, they don't give out a huge amount of smoke, but beech gives out a little bit of smoke. Ash is kind of a little bit neutral. It's very good for making coals. But they're kind of neutral woods. You could kind of mix them. They're really good with fish, actually. Beech is great with fish. But what else have we got here? Things like last year we got Valencia orange wood, which is not really available much, but Matt, our charcoal man from the UK, he got us Valencia orange wood. We have olive wood. Sometimes you get plum wood. Apple wood is great for pork, chicken, even beef, you know. So fruit wood's generally a little lighter on the flavor. Oak, hickory, things like that. So if we're thinking people are going to be going down to Homebase or somewhere, wherever it is, to buy wood chunks or whatever, your general ones you're going to get are apple, cherry, oak, hickory. Oak and hickory keep for red meat, kind of heavier cuts. Fruit woods like cherry, apple, kefir, chicken, fish. Another thing actually with that is, so if you're cooking on the coals and you're cooking dirty, remember we did flank steaks, didn't we, on the coals, and we did all the veg on the coals. So if you're using lump wood, you can cook directly on the coals, and you can also add more charcoal during your cook, unlit charcoal, and when it lights, it's fine. But if you use those briquettes, they're full of binders and sawdust and anything and everything that's around. There's been all sorts of stuff found in them. But you can't cook food directly on them because there's too many chemicals in it. So think about that when you're buying charcoal, you know? Yeah. Do you want fuel that you can't cook food directly on? No. So.
And it is the flavour that you get from cooking it dirty, which is just straight onto the coals, and how quickly the flank steak was cooked. I think I put it down onto the coals and I was about 30 seconds or so, and you're like, turn it over. It's like, just put it down. It's so quick, but the flavour, like, I think we were all just silent sitting around the table for about a minute eating it going, wow, this is really good.
It's a nice way to cook, actually. You can't do it with everything. Like, you obviously couldn't put a piece of fish on it or something, but or chicken, not really. But for steaks, it's a really nice way to cook steaks. And it's actually great if you're having a party or something, or barbecue. It's the theatre of it. And everyone's like, oh, you're cooking on the coals. It's a nice thing. It's a nice little party trick as well. But it does add a level of char. And actually, because it's a... I remember having a conversation with someone about EHO, freaking out about, God, you can't cook directly on the coals. Well, it's a sterile environment. It's like 400 and something degrees, you know? So there's no bacteria can live there. Nothing. There's no way that this could be bad for you. Yeah. So, you know, generally, if your coals are nice and glowing and you've an even bed, you won't really get charcoal sticking to meter. You might get a tiny bit the odd time, but when you take your steak off, just brush it away. But gives a super, super nice flavor to recommend everyone to try.
And the charcoal as well gives you that blue smoke as well. That kind of, it's not white, it's a little tinge of blue, isn't it? As well?
Exactly. Like barbecue and grilling is all about having a nice, clean burning fire. If your fire is starved of oxygen, you're going to have white plumes of smoke, which is going to make your food acrid. So you always want a clean burning fire. And if you look at one of your vents on your smoker or your grill, if the smoke is running light and a kind of blue tinge off it, and it's kind of light, you can barely see it, that's what you want. You're going to collect that flavor anyway from the fuel burning. So people think smoke and grilling, I need loads of smoke. The complete opposite. You need very little. So you should barely just be able to see the smoke.
Hope you're enjoying this episode. Andy is full of so many brilliant insights and tips about barbecuing. If you've listened a while, you know the deal by now about us and Patreon. You can help support us with the production costs of this 100% free podcast by pledging your support for just a couple of euro. You'll find all of the details and those tempting patron-only exclusives too at patreon.com/gastrogaze.
Or if a monthly pledge isn't your thing, you'll find us at paypal.me/gastrogaze, where you can make a one-off generous contribution and we'll love you forever and ever, and you'll be able to help us keep Chew the Fat going forever and ever. Now back to Andy, and we had to ask why he would open up Foul Play inside a pub.
So we are one floor up above a pub near Grand Canal-ish area. How had you thought to open up a restaurant inside a pub?
Trev and I were, Trev O'Shea Body Tonic, he's involved with the big grill with us. And, you know, we kind of, he rang me and he's like, look, thinking about taking this place on, you know, do you want to do a barbecue thing there? And I just went, yeah. I've been dying to do one, and I didn't even put much thought. I just said yes straight away. A year and a bit later, after good fun with our extraction system, having to pull the original one out and put a new one in because the pub was filling with smoke. So we finally got here. But we know the 3FE guys really well, Colin and all the crew up there, and we're always up there. And I just, you know, we're near the Aviva. We just said, right, well, let's give this place a punt. And you know, it's been going pretty well, you know. You know, there's no one doing really, like, no one doing grilled chicken. And I suppose what we want to do is go, this is what chicken should taste like. So we use free-range chicken, cook it over a fire. And for us, that's the most simple form of eating chicken, you know. And, you know, it's working nicely. It's a good area. It's getting pretty busy. There's a new building across the road, as you see. So, yeah, we get a lot of the tech companies in, a lot of the kind of financial services places in. So yeah, it's been good.
Favorite thing on the menu?
Ooh, has to be the rotisserie chicken. Yeah, it's just a simple thing. It's like, you know, when when will you ever not like a nice piece of grilled chicken?
Just the words rotisserie chicken just reminds me of, you know, in the continent where they are blessed with, you're just walking down the street and there's chickens on rotation constantly.
Yes. And underneath it is spuds.
That's yes!
That's what we don't do. Charcoal underneath ours, yeah. So we can. But I was actually in France a couple of days ago for my sister's 40. I was in Chamonix in the Alps, and I went to the market and they had a lovely, massive, big chicken rotisserie. It was gas, but it still looked incredible. And they're all local chickens. They're really nice, proper local chickens, not crappy farmed commercial chickens. Yeah. So
not with a stamp on it that just is produced and packed in Ireland. It's proper local.
Exactly, yeah. So it's a nice sight watching all the birds going around over the coals and the smell. You can smell it down the street. It's nice. So
I have to say I am guilty of going up to the ovens and just putting my nose into them and just going, oh, heaven, I just love that smell. For me, it's just one of the greatest smells in the world. But anyway, I digress.
So in terms of future plans, what's on the cards?
So the kind of barbecue trailer is finished this week, finally, about 8 months late. Supposed to be ready for the summer, but as these things go, it got delayed. So that's ready at the end of the week. I'm going to be using that at the big showing it at the big grill and doing some. Look, I've got a series of kind of smaller events, more intimate dining, things like the offside and a couple of other things over the year. And then we're looking at some options of Foul Play, but then looking at some options of Big Grill as well. So there might be something else next year. Yeah, so, but you know, I think where we are with Big Grill, it's a nice site, it's a good location. That event in particular is going to, you know, we're not going to expand too much within the space we have there, but we're going to look at some other stuff. So lots of cooking nice meat over fires. I'm doing Churrascada, which is a Brazilian barbecue festival. They're doing we do a swap with them every year. So we're doing, they're doing their first event in Europe. They're doing one in Belgium. So on the 15th, I think, or the 16th of September, I'm cooking over there. I'm going to bring someone from Ireland over and then we'll be going to Brazil again next year. So be a bit of crack.
I have to go back a little bit because I haven't gotten it out of my head. So Christmas Day, you know, sleigh bells ringing, you're outside on a barbecue smoking your turkeys and hams yourself.
As clearly everyone should be, I think, right?
Yeah. Explain all that because it just sounds magical and so different and so much better than probably all of our Christmas dinners put together.
So yeah, I always get a really nice, best quality turkey I can get my hands on. I actually usually buy them from Pat Whelan, James Whelan Butchers. I usually get a nice bronze turkey and I get one of his heritage hams. His heritage cured hams, they're incredible. And then I basically set up the smoker at about 5, 6 a.m. and just smoke it for the morning. Then by kind of after lunch, it's all ready and resting. And then we just carve off it for a few days. But yeah, it's fun. I actually quite like it, to be honest. I've been pretty hungover for a few times doing it. The last couple of years, I haven't been so bad. I kind of like it. You're up on your own, you're having a coffee and you're just kind of sitting there and to yourself, and it's kind of a nice experience. It's quite calming, just sitting there watching it. And then, you know, people call around and, you know, they have a look at what you're doing, and you know, your brother-in-law or something comes out and helps you, and your dad knocks out and goes, when's it ready? And then, you know, so that's pretty much all I get from him. And then yeah, it's nice. And then it makes the food last a little bit longer as well in the fridge, so because it's smoked, so you get a couple more days out of it. But it adds a totally different flavour to your Christmas dinner. It's way less dry for the turkey, which is great. So yeah, I really enjoy it. It's good. I'd recommend everyone trying it. Yeah.
Get the barbecues out December 23rd. Give it a go. And you have normal sides with it, I assume, yeah?
Yeah, pretty normal size. Yeah. I don't get stuck into the sides. I let the family do that. Good roast potatoes and things like that. But yeah, just the smoked meat. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds so dreamy.
I did barbecue actually some last year. I did grill some Brussels sprouts with the Peter Hannon's guanciale actually. So yeah, and that was the first time I actually liked Brussels sprouts. I actually hated them. So we grilled them the next day. We grilled a load of those on skewers, and then we cut them in half, grilled them on skewers, basted them in a load of butter, and then grilled some guanciale, and then we tossed it all together in a pan. So yeah, it's pretty nice.
That is the best leftovers I've ever heard in my life.
And I also love the fact it's like, I don't really like Brussels sprouts until they're covered in meat. I like that.
Cooked on a grill. Yeah. Totally changed the flavour of the Brussels sprouts cooked on a grill. So that's one to recommend, even if you got a little sieve and held your sieve over the coals and cut them in half and cooked them that way as well. They'd be a lot easier to manage. So try anything. It totally changes the flavour of veg, you know, so cooking over fire.
Where are your favourite places to eat in Dublin City?
Ooh, God, that's a tough one. So definitely Forest and Marcy. Then I would have to say Ayo Baba, you know, the little Vietnamese place on Capel Street. I love that place. It's always rammed. Just going in there for a bowl of pho on my own. It's kind of my happy place. I love it. Shouk, you know, the Middle Eastern place. I ate there. I really like that. I would have to say as well. Good question. It's a tricky one.
Much choice.
There is. I actually answered this question a few months ago in an interview, and I can't remember what was the other one. Yeah.
Actually, quite unique choices already.
They're two very different places, but I love them for very different reasons, you know.
Does the Dublin food scene excite you still?
Absolutely, yeah, more than ever. Yeah. Seeing places like Loose Cannon opening up, and I actually grew up with Brian. He on the same road, and we like just go rollerblading together and stuff. And we used to hang around together for years, so it's great to see. You know, we both kind of went different paths, and now we're both kind of doing similar things. But like places like Loose Cannon opening up, and you know, it's incredible. It's great, you know. I love to see that, you know. So I think it's more exciting than ever. The only problem is, I suppose, it's so difficult to open a place in the city centre now. You know, with rents and key money being back is just, you know. I looked at one or two places and up around Portobello, up near the Shaw area, and the key money was insane for these really tiny units. And, you know, it's quite off-putting. And that's kind of one of the reasons we kind of pushed on with the trailer as well, to do more bespoke stuff as well.
And then moving away from the bricks and mortar of restaurants, street food. Yeah. Dublin street food, it has never really come along. We obviously have Eat Yard, which has been open now a year and a half, and it's doing really well, and it's making a great name for itself. But we still haven't quite gotten to that stage that London, New York, everywhere like that has. Do you ever feel that that will change?
Yes, I do. I mean, I think, you know, the problem is there's just not the level of, like, it's different when you go to street feast in the UK or whatever. And I was doing a demo at Latitude a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, street feasts were doing all the food vendors, and they had like 70 something vendors or something. And it was like, most of the food was pretty good. Some of it was okay, but to have that level of traders to pick from, we just don't have. And I think that's the problem. I think we've gone up a notch from the markets, and some people start there and some of the food's great, some of it's not so great. And I think it's just gonna take a bit of time for people to be a bit more adventurous and to have spaces. But the big problem is actually having a space to go and sell street food. You're not allowed, it's impossible to put a food truck anywhere. You can't be in situ for more than 28 days if you're doing a street food site. So it's like, if you're running a bar, it changes, you have to get fire certs, and it changes the whole complexity of everything, security and everything. So to be honest with you, I think the council and the government need to give people a bit more credit and go, well, why can't we have a designated area of council land or wherever with where we can serve street food and at an affordable price and have a bar, and if people want to go and have a beer and something to eat, why can't they do that? You know, it doesn't have to be always focused around a pub or a restaurant. You know, I think we're really missing that here. You know, I think it would really add a lot to the city if we could do more pop-up stuff like that, and not have to have the whole rigmarole of getting, you know, event licenses and everything like that. You know, I think it's really, really restrictive.
And actually on that point as well, the fact that so many, Ireland is weird in the way that so many people start up a restaurant and then go into the, you know, selling at festivals and street food kind of thing. It's the opposite way, whereas you lose a lot of the entrepreneurial spirit, I suppose, by, you know, I have this idea, I'm going to test it out, give it a go, and then it becomes a great restaurant. It's counterintuitive in a way.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, some people have done it that way, but totally in the UK, it's totally like that in London or whatever. You know, as you know from going over there and being there, it's a lot of people starting street feast things and move on to restaurants, like Smokestack being a perfect example. But it's very difficult to do that here, and it's great that Eat Yard is there and there's a space there for people to do that and test the water. It's just very difficult, I suppose, with weather and the red tape to do a proper site like this. And I'd love the fruit market to be, you know, full of food, and that's been happening for 8-9 years or more. And you know, there's so many spaces sitting around that can't necessarily be used for housing or whatever that would be perfect for a market, and it adds vibrancy to a city. It's a tourist attraction, you know, and you know, let's all grow up here. We're not, you know, everyone's not going out and getting hammered in bars drinking shots. You know, the generation has moved on. You know, we need to, you know, I think the council and everyone need to understand that, you know, food and drink go hand in hand, and there's less antisocial behavior and less problems when food is around drink. So, you know, why not let someone open up a big street food market with a bar, you know? I think it would be great.
Any day now, any day. You've obviously traveled a lot in your work, and you've obviously eaten around the world a lot. Where are the places that have excited you the most?
You know, I've been to Buenos Aires, was mind-blowing. Brazil, because Sao Paulo was really good, but it was difficult because you kind of have to know the city. And we had some people, we brought us over there to show us around. Food was good there. Buenos Aires blew us away. That was really, really good. But, you know, I was Texas, Austin was amazing. But I would have to say France, I was just in last week, was incredible. London, it's just everything in London. I go over there probably 4 or 6 times a year, and with various people, and we bring Ivan and people like that over. We just eat around all day and eat and have a drink and just discover new things. And it's just so many different cultures and cuisines there, and cool places. It's just, it has to be number one for me. Yeah, it's just so easy to get to, and it's got everything, you know? So as they say, we're 4 or 5 years behind London. So, but it's kind of true in ways, but yeah, London for me, definitely. So yeah. And Thailand, actually, I suppose. I spent 3 months in Thailand with my girlfriend in 2012, and that was a pretty incredible experience. So, you know, up the north eating Isan food, and that's kind of why we had the whole thing bringing Andy Ricker over, because that's what he's done. It's incredible his knowledge and understanding of flavors from Thailand, but when you eat regional Thai food, it's they're flavors you never forget, you know? They hit you in the face, and you still remember them 6-7 years later, you know?
God, he has a knack for making you hungry, right? For something so daunting for some people, like barbecue can be, Andy makes it seem like such a simple and everyday activity. He lives and breathes it, and of course takes global inspiration and brings it back home too.
I'm still dreaming about the shoulder of goat on the barbecue, to be honest. Whether he's organising blowout celebrations of meat, like the Big Grill, which take place every August in Dublin's Herbert Park, or thinking up restaurants and dining concepts to help make cooking on coal and over open flame more omnipresent across Dublin, Andy is the man who is tempting everyone to start playing with fire.